Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Young Pyromancers podcast. I am your host, Ezra.
I'm Charlie.
And today, we are going to be talking about MTG Arena 101, but also rotation. So, Standard is rotating tomorrow, Thursday, September 17th. And we're just going to be talking all about that and budget decks if you're just getting into the game. But before that, we have one housekeeping item to go over.
So as some of you might have already assumed, Ezra and I are still in school. Unfortunately, I haven't graduated yet. And school has started once again, and this means we have a little bit of a different schedule than we did during the summer. Neither of us are quite sure how this happened, but we both have, like, packed schedules during the week, so the recording schedule and release schedule for episodes may change slightly. Just an FYI, we're still gonna do our very best to release episodes once a week, whether that's on Wednesday, Saturday, or Sunday, or any other time of week. One other really quick thing, this is our first episode that isn't kind of... that is specifically not Commander-focused. So please let us know what you think. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us at youngpowercast@gmail.com, but we'll be sure to plug that stuff in more detail later.
Yeah, so if you enjoy this arena content, we can definitely put out more of that. But, okay, so rotation. Once every year with the release of the fall set, Standard rotates, so the oldest four sets rotate out, and it becomes a five set format rather than a nine, because it helps keep power creep, and also it changes up the format in a big way, allowing smaller or unrepresented or less powerful archetypes to really shine through.
So it allows brewing to happen.
Yeah, because I feel like most recently it's been all ramp decks and sacrifice decks in Standard for like the last couple of months. So hopefully a good aggro deck can pop up. But Charlie, why don't you read for us the sets that are rotating out of Standard?
Yeah, right before that, I just want to give like a small appreciation, like a moment of appreciation for brewing. I don't know, this is kind of my one experience with having just like an experience where you just get to brew and everything's new, and that was when Pioneer came out.
Yeah.
And I think some of the most enjoyable magic is finding a deck that you think is super cool and then brewing a build that works, it's cool, it's fun, and it's powerful. And that's one of my favorite parts of magic, and rotation is one of the best ways for you to do that, because unfortunately we don't get a new format every summer. So, yeah. So rotating out is Guilds of Ravnica, Ravnica Allegiance, War of the Spark, and M20.
We will not miss you, Hydroid Crisis. And Nissa. Ugh. Staying in our Throne of Eldraine, Theros Beyond Death, Ikoria, Lair of Behemoths, and Corset 2021. And the Standard of the future will be Zendikar Rising, which will be added to Standard. And then the Winter set, Kaldheim. Spring set, Strixhaven. Summer set, Adventures in the Forgotten Realms, which is replacing a core set. And then after that, Innistrad Vampires, I think, is before Innistrad Werewolves. But that will cause the next rotation to rotate. Eldraine, Theros, Ikoria, and core set will all rotate out. So... Before we can move on to the next thing, if you have something related to rotation, then yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just gonna say I'm kind of like looking at this list now and just the 12, you know, bullet points, and I'm saying like these eight future sets that will be Standard, they look so much more like mythical than the previous four, like Throne of Eldraine,
yeah,
and Theros Beyond Death versus like Guilds of Ravnica.
Yeah, because that was just a year of Ravnica. Like that entire year was Ravnica.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about that.
I feel like we want more format diversity, but like,
yeah,
Strixhaven, Adventures in Forgotten Realms, very similar. I bet Kaldheim's gonna be similar to Theros. So yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about this homogenous feel. Like the only one that really stands out is Zendikar and Ikoria.
Yeah,
those are like the only two non-high fantasy worlds. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, I definitely prefer this to the block format and one core set, because like when I first started playing, it was Return to Ravnica block was like the first set I played. I mean, I was too young to like actually grasp the concept of blocks, but staying in Ravnica for the whole year, I mean, I guess they did it again here. We were just in the same place and it was the same feel for the entire year. But I feel like they have this opportunity to be different, but everything is still the same. Like it's still this next year is so similar, and I wish like either Strixhaven or Kaldheim was in Estrad or Phyrexia or what Kamigawa, whatever, just something in this next year that isn't just a high fantasy world. Because Zendikar too, it's just high fantasy.
Yeah,
This next year
that's
is just
really
all.
interesting. It seems like it's the rotating out is the, tried and true,
Formula. Tried and true formula
and
of
we know
Magic.
places, we know this, and now we have eight sets of virtually new stuff except for Zendikar, and yeah, it's I think it's interesting. Do you want to have entirely new stuff, or do you want to have old stuff, or do you want to have a mix of them? I
Well,
think. Oh,
yeah. I
I
think they're
think
trying
you.
to return to one place per year. So we saw Theros return, then the Ravnica before that, and now we have Zendikar returning this year.
Yeah, I think that some mix of the two. I think returning to one place a year probably is somewhere around the right ratio. But yeah, I think we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, I'd like to see more variation within those new sets, though. I feel like trying to differentiate Adventures in the Forgotten Realms from Zendikar from Strixhaven is gonna be
Yeah,
like,
I already
nah.
kind of, I've already like I kind of meld Eldraine and Theros Beyond Death and Ikoria together, and the only like big difference I can pull out is Ikoria has cycling, and that's all I
And
remember.
mutate.
Yeah, I
Just
didn't
because
even
of how
remember that,
complicated that was. Right, I mean, mutate, yeah, that's true. But yeah, I feel like differentiating Strixhaven from Kaldheim from Zendikar Rising is going to be the problem from this next thing. I just hope that power isn't off the charts and we don't have to deal with elks and or doubling mana. I'm looking at you, Fires of Invention, and Nissa. But I think this next year will be pretty cool. So,
Oh yeah,
renewal.
I'm actually super excited for Kaldheim. I think like Norse mythology is
Oh
super
yeah.
interesting.
No, Kaldheim's gonna be great.
Oh yeah.
No, I don't think Kaldheim's gonna be a problem. But renewal is what's gonna be happening tomorrow. And when you log in tomorrow or later, if as long as you logged in today or in the past to MTG Arena, you will get 10 rare or higher ICRs. ICRs are individual card rewards. And I think the ICRs are all from Zendikar, but I could be wrong.
I suppose we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, so, and then you get a bunch of other things in the Mastery Pass. Those include a lot of uncommon ICRs from ZNR, also three ZNR boosters, three mythic ICRs, and a cool sleeve. Yeah, that is it for renewal in our first half. Let's go to New Horizons.
Yeah, so this is going to be a pretty brisk episode.
Yeah, this is the fastest we've ever gotten to New Horizons, I think, ever. It's just a quick episode that we wanted to get out there because it's more of a PSA, go get your stuff than anything, but
But yeah, so we have a few things to talk about here. There's a few things coming up in New Horizons. So why don't we kind of start with the elephant in the room? Zendikar Rising, it exists, it's coming.
tomorrow,
Yep. So I
or
mean,
maybe today, depending on when you're listening to this.
there isn't much more to be said on the topic, but this is a new
Oh,
set.
it does mean something for us, though. It means set reviews are coming up. We've got a Commander set
Indeed,
review.
there will be,
I
get
think.
ready for 2.5 hour episodes.
Oh, maybe not 2.5, but the next four
I
episodes for sure are
hopefully
Zendikar
not.
Rising. There's no way that we can't do this. We're doing two main set reviews, I think. For the main set, we're
Yep, we'll
doing
have
a
two
review.
episodes of a main set review. We'll talk about
New commanders,
commanders.
and then the commander precons. Those, Those are interesting. We've got an Anowon the Rune Thief, the Sneak Attack deck, and also the Landswrath Obun Naya, no, Moldiah Ancestor. So that those are two pretty sweet decks, looking to be in the lower price range of $20 to $25. I think this is the best thing. Like, they were talking about Year of Commander. I don't care about anything at this point. The fact that they're giving us $20 precons that are good and with decent reprints, that, like, makes me happier than anything that they've done, any product. Like, this is the best product that they have released for Commander players, period. Everything else is too expensive.
Yeah, I'm looking at this.
Yeah, accessible precons. We're going to be talking about those more, but, like, it's a $20 deck with $80 reprints. Like, $80 of all the reprints added together. It's insane. Like, we're getting reprints of...
I'm not, you know, I won't say I'm the very best mathematician, but I know that 80 is more than 20.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're getting reprints of Sig, River Cutthroat, Una, Queen of the Fae. Some serious reprints in that rogue deck. And in that
Omnath.
Lands deck. Oh, and in that lands deck, yep, we got Omnath. I think Avenger of Zendikar. This is, I mean, the deck straight out of the deck. We'll talk about this more, but they suck. They're so bad. The coves are insane. Like, there's no one drops, no two drops, no three drops. And then there's just, like, 7-8 drops. But we'll fix that up with our, I've only done the sneak attack one. These ones need more help, so just as a quick preview for our things, we're doing 15 out, 15 in, because the 10 out, 10 in was not enough to fix the deck. We needed to take out 15 cards, but because these are more shot at super budget players, I made sure that all of them added together, it's like a $5 card shipment from TCG Player, so... Yeah, that coming in soon. I don't know when that one is gonna be coming out. Most likely that one comes out second, I think. But anyways, let's move to our next one. I talked for a bit. You can talk about this next one as well.
Yeah, I suppose I can. Secret Lair. There are many, but this is kind of an important one. Zendikar. Zendikar Revisited. So, there are 5 cards. They're all showcase, of course, as Secret Lair is. It's Admonition Angel, Royal Elemental, Zulaport Cutthroat, Warren Instigator, and Avenger of Zendikar. So yeah, I'm not sure which ones of these you know, but I can think of one or two cards here that I really, really like, and I'd love to get my hands on.
The Warren Instigator, oh, that's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
The Warren Instigator is nice. I think it's $29.99 for the non-foil and $39.99 for the foil. It's just too much. Like, sell this for $20, not $30.
I don't really know if I want to pay $6 a card. How much is Warren Instigator?
Warren Instigator is like 4. Royal Elemental's 10. Admonition Angel is getting a reprint, but is currently sitting at like a 12. Avengers,
I mean,
8.
Not actually not terrible.
Zulaport Cutthroat's a book.
Is a $6 card.
$6 card. Admonition Angel and Royal Elemental are both around the $10 range, but they're just one reprint away from being a 50-cent card. Like, Admonition Angel doesn't see play anywhere other than Commander, and same with Royal Elemental. They were both bulk rare and mythic rare for a while, and then they started creeping up within the last couple of years. Did you say Avenger is the green card, right?
Indeed.
Yeah, so Avengers Zendikar is like an $8 code. Got reprinted in Double Masters. Again, is going to be reprinted. I think just keep printing Avenger, because that's a code that shouldn't be that expensive. Just
yeah,
in general.
I think Avenger is just, it's such a core card in Commander.
Right.
And I
it's
think
just like one of the best green finishers.
Cards, people deserve to be able to play them without spending a lot of money. Just like as a core value, I think... you know, if it's a card that everyone plays, it's super cool, it's fun, you know, you should be able to play it. You should be able to put Sol Ring in your deck, you know? Yeah, I think you should be able to put Arcane Signet in your deck without spending, you know, $300 on a deck or something.
And honestly, that I'm not sure how I feel about Zulaport Cutthroat. Because, I mean, it's fine, but it's not a good reprint. This is already like a $1 card less. It's less than a dollar.
It
I'd
looks
rather
cool.
have. I mean, I know we probably can't do legendary things, but I'd much rather have either drawn a Liberator of Malakir or Kalita's Trader of Ghent if you're going from Battle for Zendikar. Or if you want to go OG original, Nilqana Revenant is a good card that needs to be reprinted. As does Bloodchief Ascension. But, yeah, I mean, it's fine. I wouldn't advise buying it. Kaladesh Remastered is the next thing. They have pushed Pioneer Masters to 2021. That means we're getting Kaladesh. They better not put Felidar Guardian in this set, because otherwise Historic is, they were gonna need to ban it on arrival. And I bet when they were thinking about doing Kaladesh Block Remastered, they were like, nope, we're not putting Felidar Guardian in. Because Felidar Saheeli would break Historic, I guarantee it. If it broke Pioneer, it's doing stuff in Modern, and it broke Standard, then I don't think you need to print it into Historic. No matter how much I love Copycat, like, that is my, that was my Pioneer deck before it got banned. But, I like Copycat, just don't print it in there. I like the idea of getting the Gearhulks in there, though. Torrential Gearhulk, very fun card. Same with Combustible.
Maybe fun, sure. I don't know. It seems a little bit oppressive, maybe.
Yeah, Kaladesh was just an oppressive block. I hope they handle this well. I really do. Like, Oman can't
Torrential
re. Oh no!
is just a painful
Wait.
card.
Yeah, Torrential's painful. But I just realized they print things that are not in the set, but they were in the. I mean, they printed Coco in, which was not even a masterpiece. But if they start printing masterpieces, you think Aether Vial sneaks into the set because it's a masterpiece?
No,
I hope not.
I won't.
Like, you already printed Collected Company. We're just gonna have Modern Humans in here. Actually, wait, Modern Humans doesn't even play. Does it? Doesn't play Collected Company, does it? I don't think so. It doesn't. It's
It's
too
just a
focused.
vile deck, I'm pretty
Yeah,
sure.
it's a vial. Maybe don't print Aether Vial, please, Wizards. But I mean, they printed Thoughtseize in last time, so who knows what to say they're gonna print next. Okay, Mythic Invitational and the flop on day four. That was a cool tournament. Congrats to Seth Manfield, Hall of Famer, on his win over Gabriel Nassif, another Hall of Famer. So we had an action-packed weekend. Sultai mid-range winning it all against Jund Sacrifice, but also that last day four failure where they couldn't even get it up on Sunday and they just pre-recorded all the games, broadcasted on Monday. I mean, I guess. But also big day, big weekend for Luis Salvado's Rakdos Arcanist deck, which is actually the deck I'm currently playing in Historic. That is a neat deck. I mean, I stumbled upon it like a month ago, and I immediately I'm like, this is the deck that I want to craft and play. But it is a very cool deck with Dreadhorde Arcanist, Thoughtseize, that sort of thing, and he actually won the tournament technically, like one days one and two, and then lost in the upper bracket finals, and then lost again to Seth Manfield in the lower bracket finals. But yeah, Mythic Invitational, very cool. Bad day for Goblins. Only one Goblins player made it into the top eight despite having like 40% of the meta. Yeah, Mythic Invitational. That was fun if you watched it. But not really that monumental for anyone else. Zendikar Rising minigames, this doesn't matter at all, but it's cool. It's gonna be in the set boosters, so there are cool little mini games that you can play with booster packs. That's about what it is.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, I think the mini games are just because they replace ad cards, so just like whatever, just don't give
Yeah.
me ad cards. It's dumb.
I
I'd rather
think
have
I'm
a mini
happy
game card.
to, I think I'd rather have a mini game card, being a placeholder in between different cards rather than I would have an ad card, because
Ad
mini
card.
game cards, maybe it's fun. We'll see. I think
Yeah, some of
I'm
them actually look kind
optimistic.
of fun. Some of them kind of look pretty fun. Maybe this is just a one-off thing because I doubt there's that many that they can think of. Like you can't do infinite. But okay, my treasured find today is Pure and Simple. It's a split card. I mean, I'm kind of on this train of the three color dissension split cards,
Hey,
but
if they're good, talk about them,
they're very good. Oh, I think this is an instant play in every single Naya deck, which is kind of a bit much, but like it's good. So Pure, is one side. It's one red and a green for a sorcery. Destroy target not multicolored permanent. So anything multicolored, which basically hits all the commanders. And simple, one green and a white for a sorcery. Destroy all auras and equipment. The versatility on this card and the floor of this card is just crazy. You're playing this in a deck that runs creatures. You're not playing auras and equipment if you're in Naya. I mean, don't play this in your Oil the Mist Stalker deck, but that's pretty obvious. Just any Naya Big Stomp, whether that be Mael or Atla Polani, just being able to destroy all auras and equipment, especially as auras and equipment become more and more viable things in Commander with stuff like the new Akiri and other auras decks like Rafika the Many that have been around forever. You know,
and Boots and Greaves.
And Boots and Greaves, everyone plays them in every single deck. And also auras like that you wouldn't even like think about, but are kind of problematic. Whether that be Overgrowth or Wild Growth, Photoground. Destroying all auras and equipment, but not enchantments and artifacts, is very good. Because you can play all the artifacts and enchantments that you want. But auras and equipment, just a board wipe for auras and equipment, that I'm fine with that.
Yeah, and I think that other half of the card is certainly nothing to laugh at. I mean, Beast Within is just about, Beast Within and its counterparts are just about the best removal Red and Naya have. An F3 mana, destroy target permanent with a downside. I mean, Pure can't kill lands and it can't kill monocolored commanders or creatures or other whatever permanent it is. But most commanders are multicolored, and I think 3 mana to destroy an opponent's commander that can be, you know, up to 6 mana in Sultai is really, really good and is really backbreaking if you're a Sultai player.
And also, since no one has ever played this card, when you say, like this, when I looked up, like, some cards and I was going, like, reverse EDH rec order, this was pretty high up there. But since no one has ever played this, and you slam it, windmill slam it down on the table when they have tons of wars and equipment, and you say, I cast simple. And they're just like, what? Yeah, like, no one's simple. Ever heard of this card.
That's just a word. That's not
yeah,
hard.
Or I cast pure on your commander that's been suited up with everything. Now, keep in mind, these are both sorceries, but you get both halves. Oh, wait, that's one more thing. It doesn't have fuse, so you can't cast both sides. That's also worth noting. Only one. And it's 11 cents, so there's absolutely no reason why you shouldn't be playing this in every single Naya deck. Maybe not. Oh, except for Earl. Alright, why don't you go ahead with your card with which perhaps has the best name of any treasure find.
Yeah, so it's not exactly cheap, but I'd like to talk about it in a similar card. Rise of the Hobgoblins. It's 2 Boros hybrid mana for an enchantment. It's only 2 mana, which is super cheap. When it enters the battlefield, you can pay X. If you do, you create X 1/1 red and white goblin soldier creature tokens. So they're goblins, that's cool. But I think the important part is you can pay a Boros hybrid, so it's just 1 mana. Red creatures and white creatures you control gain first strike until end of turn. Similar cards. So this card is $2.96. A similar card is Knighthood, which is 2 and a white for an enchantment. Creatures you control have first strike. So you'd say, it's only 1 mana and it's permanent first strike. But, I mean, sure, it's cool, but I actually really, really like this card. I think that giving that ability is so incredibly threatening that it may be even more powerful than Knighthood is in itself. Just because you can, like, politic with that and you can get so much value out of it. Saying, hey, I won't activate it if you don't block. And it can force so many situations and provide so much value, I think. I think that in play this is going to perform super, super powerfully if you can do it correctly. I just think it's really, really good.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very good card. You have cards like Ankle Shanker, which are, like, a rare, but, like, you see play. But I don't see Rise of the Hobgoblin seeing very much play. Wait a second, when I'm looking on EDH Rec, it says less play than Highland Berserker, which is a Berserker ally that's basically a 2-1, and whenever an ally enters the battlefield, your allies get first strike until end of turn. That is not a good card. Rise of the Hobgoblins should just see more play.
I think that just generally, having a choice in like combat, in combat is really, really powerful. With like pump effects with like Kenrith or something, saying, "Oh, I won't pump if you do this." That kind of thing is so powerful and is so underestimated, just because of the political power it has in games. So yeah, if you don't have anything else to say, I think we can move on to
Oh, I have one more thing. And this card is one reprint, or like one mystery booster printing away from being a 50-cent card. So, just wait for that to get reprinted. The price will come down. Okay, top budget standard decks. We're going to be talking about very good budget decks coming into rotation. I have a couple of honorable mentions before we get into our top five. Honorable mentions go to ramp decks, adventures decks, mono white aggro, and mono green stompy. Adventures, ramp, and stompy have the problem of requiring too many rare wild cards, and mono white aggro is just not that powerful. I mean, I can attest to that because I've played a little bit of it.
It just tends to dirtle a lot when,
Yeah, I mean
your pride mate gets removed.
Oh, it's not life gain. It's not a life gain
What
deck.
is it?
It's
I'm
so the
at I'm at a
core.
loss.
Okay. No, so okay, so the core of this deck is Bozri Ket.
Oh, it's a
It's
Bozri Ket deck.
Bozri
I
it's
see.
so it's
Yeah, this
Bozri
still
Ket.
I think this the same thing might happen.
Yeah, it is, you're
I
right.
may
It
be
kind of is.
mistaken for what the deck is, but I think the same thing happens. Healer's Hawk. A 1/1 for one with flying and lifelink. Good rate. Sure, cool. Doesn't actually do very well by itself. Does take 20 turns to win. So, I mean, I know it's inevitable. It's a Stormcrow. But it just doesn't do that well without, like, a
And
Bozri Ket with it.
Hawk is rotating out, and it's not like before. It was like the main piece that it's missing, or that's rotating out, is Venerated Loxodon, and that was the big card that
If
was
you
pushing it
don't.
over the top.
With like really small creatures, you just need a finisher or something, just anything at
Yeah.
all to give you just that last bit of help. And I think this is kind of shown in cycling decks, but cycling decks do have that last thing you need. Once they've gotten their board wipes out, the game's almost over. You have that Zenith Flare, the
Yeah,
Zenith
Zenith
Flare
Flare to.
with all of your creatures that are dead. They all have cycling, and you can just do that last 8 points of damage to finish your opponent off. Or you have, you also have Lurrus. Lurrus is a really good card. That's all I have to
Yeah.
say on that.
So this mono white aggro deck, it's losing Unbreakable Formation, which was its only good way of protecting itself, and so it becomes this really fragile aggro deck, and it has two key parts. A is aggressive under-costed creatures, which the main suite are Giant Killer, which helps with removal, Seasoned Hollow Blade, and Selfless Savior. That's the last one. And then I've seen some lists run Alcide of Life's Bounty for extra protection, because Unbreakable Formation is rotating out. But then it's also got Bozri Ket, Bozri Solidarity. You can run Bozri's Lieutenant also, because it's got a minor 1/1 theme. And Glorious Anthem. So you're pumping up your creatures, making them really big. And yeah, so Mono White Aggro is. It's a close sixth place to this fifth place deck, which I think because this is a deck that I've played, I can talk about.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so this is Rakdos Sacrifice slash Rakdos Aggro. And I think this is becoming more and less and less of a sacrifice deck and more of an aggro deck. The key cards. Oh, so we're going to be talking about for each of these archetypes key cards and also cards that are it's losing to rotation. Key cards are well, if they ever unban Cat Elven, my favorite kitty. But also, it's got the main sack theme of Archfiend's Vessel, or not Archfiend's Vessel. It's like Claim the Firstborn, Lurrus, Serrated Scorpion, that sort of thing. But also cool. Now it's more of a graveyard deck with stuff like Call the Death Dweller, Lurrus, Mire Triton, and Archfiend's Vessel, and in the new Zendikar card that whenever a creature dies, you return it to the battlefield. So you sack Archfiend's Vessel to Village Rites, and then use an instant on it to return it to the battlefield, making a 5/5 demon and drawing 2 cards. And you can, in theory, do that as early as 2/2. So it's a very fragile aggro deck. And because it relies on... all the new versions rely on Archfiend's Vessel so much, the demon token just dies to literally anything because it has zero CMC. Dies to eliminate, dies to bounce spells, dies to whatever. It doesn't die to damage-based things. This deck also loses... yeah, it just dies. It loses Mayhem Devil, Priest of Forgotten Gods, and Gutter Bones, which were three of the major key parts in the Sacrifice deck previously. Okay, number four, also a deck that I have played, but Charlie, I've explained to Charlie how this deck kind of works, so Charlie, you can go ahead.
I think I have a pretty, you know, at least a little bit of an understanding of it. It's Ords of Auras. Ords of Auras is a deck that uses cards like All That Glitters, Hateful, Eidolon, and Auras, and these cards work together, and you have a lot of really small creatures. And you put enchantments on them, and they get bigger and bigger and bigger. And once you have big creatures, you attack. But Hateful Eidolon is a really, really good card, because when it gets removed, it allows you to draw cards for enchantments on it, I think, or creatures.
Or you other call. Creatures. So yeah, Hateful Eidolon says whenever an enchanted creature dies, you draw a card for each aura attached to it. So it's not just your creatures. So we run four copies of Deadweight and four copies of Myers Grasp, neither of which are rotating. So basically my experience of the deck is if you are playing against a deck that has any creatures, like any small creatures, you win. So mono red, just dead to you. Like, because you have four copies of Deadweight, four copies of Myers Grasp, each of which cantrip you with Hateful Eidolon. So if you can get Eidolon and you can chain together a couple of auras, it's impossible for creature-based aggro decks to beat you.
Yeah, just quick. Generally, the downside to playing Deadweight in one for one removal is once you use it, it's gone, and now you used your spell that isn't very good on their thing that wasn't very good. But now say you have two more of those in hand, and now they have an 8/8 on the battlefield. It's not as good, but it's a lot better when you draw a card every time it happens.
Yeah, and then this deck also plays Lurrus either as a companion or in the main board. I think I'm considering messing around with playing four Lurrus in the main board, because the deck is so much better with Lurrus, and it also could use some extra late game stuff with things like, what's the moth? Luminous Brood Moth.
Just call it Mothra, I don't know.
Yeah, Mothra, and also stuff like Rankle. Rankle's very good to suit up. But because of Lewis's restriction, we can't play those cards. But yeah, they're currently playing Lewis as a companion. Lewis is also, if you play it as a companion, you can't play in the main deck, unlike stuff like Chigantha or Yorion. And with rotation, it loses Healer's Hawk, that's it. Oh, and a couple of auras, so Sentinel's Mark and Glaring Aegis, which were okay, but the deck is still fine, because it plays more of a negative Aura's main theme. And one common thread that I'm seeing with a lot of decks that are running black these days is it's so easy to just jam in Archfiend's Vessel plus Call the Death Dweller, because as long as you're playing Lewis as a companion, you have a way to reanimate Vessel. Plus Vessel has lifelink, so putting Aura's on it is good.
Yeah, now we're into the top three.
Top three. Yeah, I can do this one, and then because your next one is pretty good for you. Mono red aggro is the next deck. The key cards that are going to be in the deck are Anax, Harden in the Forge, Rimrock Knight, Embercleave, Torbran. Luckily, that's almost all the rares. You can use Robber of the Rich and Castle Embereth to make the deck stronger, but definitely not necessary. And then we have a new tool from Zendikar Rising that we saw Reed Duke play this morning. It's Akum Hellhound, which is a red step lynx, so it's a red mana for a 0/1 dog, and whenever you it has landfall, it gets +2/+2. So half of the time, this is a 2/3. One drop, and because all the one drops have previously, the good one drops have rotated basically Scorch Spader. And we also have Fervent Champion, but this deck wants to run a lot of 1-drops. And Akum Hellhound, we're seeing more and more players run this over Goblin Arsonist, which I found to be a lackluster card. It's just not a good card. Arsonist is the one that dies in pings. 1-1 for 1 is not good, but Akum Hellhound is a 2-3 sometime, so...
Yeah, so is Curd Ape. Curd Ape is a 1-mana, 1-1. So it gets +1/+2 as long as you control the forest. I'd say Curd Ape's a little bit better, but they're pretty comparable. And Curd Ape is played in Modern, and it's a really good card.
Right, Naya Zoo, it's a mainstay in Naya Zoo, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, which they're actually probably played in the same deck, because that deck plays Steplinks anyways, so now all those decks are playing Akum Hellhound, as well as Wayward Guide Beast to recur those, but Scorch Spitter is, we're losing Scorch Spitter, we're also losing Cavalcade of Calamity, if you were taking that Cavalcade. Yeah, I mean, not all decks were playing it, I mean, I know, a lot of the decks were going all in on Anax Cleave because that was what was powerful. Cavalcade, also a non-bow with Bolt Hound, which is what we're seeing as a very good 3-drop in decks now. But Cavalcade, in those mono-red Cavalcade decks, is definitely taking... It's a big hit for mono-red decks. Also, Light Up the Stage was its only real good way of getting repeatable card advantage. So... I don't know what Red is going to do. Also has a very new cool sideboard card in that new anti-life gain card, the Roiling Vortex. But more on that later in our set review.
That card is so awesome. Yeah.
It almost is the best sideboard card, if not for Confounding Conundrum in blue, which is an absurdly stupid card. But, why don't you go to number 2 deck?
Yeah, I'd love to. This is actually a deck that I'm pretty familiar with. I tried to make it work at the very start of Ikoria.
Yeah, I remember this. When Ikoria released, you were like, oh, I'm playing
I told you all deck. I would make... what's the turtle's...
Yadaro.
Yeah, I told you all I would make Yadaro work.
Yeah, in the set Yadaro review, he's like, I'm going to do Yadaro.
I made it work. And
I was like, nah, you're not going to do it. But
I made it work. And, now it's a really good deck. Not quite the build I had at the very start, but it's good. Zenith Flare, Flourishing Fox, cards that have a cycling cost for 1 mana. And one new card that, Ezra and I were actually having some discussion about, we're not quite sure what position this will have, but we think it definitely has an opportunity to be a very good card. It's Magmatic Channeler. It's 1 and a red for a 1/3. But if you have 4 or more instant or sorcery cards in your graveyard that you could have cycled, it gets +3/+1. So it's a 2-mana 4/4. 2-mana 4/4 is a good, but does it go into a cycling deck, which is already so strict on cards? You have to have your 30 cyclers already, and so we'll see.
And we're reserving that one non-cycling slot for either you're playing Savai Triome to cast Memory Leak, which is like already weakening the deck a little bit. But we're reserving that 4-0 slot for Zenith Flare. Like, that's the only non-cycling card in the deck. Everything else cycles. Or is a land. Basic land.
Yeah, or, like, Lurrus. And Lurrus is just a power.
But Lurrus is free. Lurrus is free.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't need to take out a slot in the deck.
Yep. Go ahead.
So, Magmatic Channeler, I was arguing that I might decide to try this out because I do have a cycling deck on Arena. It's a very cheap deck to make, which is... we probably should have mentioned that more. We're not saying the best decks, period. These are the best budget decks. So least
budget in the sense that wild cards are
wild cards, right. So less rares and mythics, as low as possible. Magmatic Channeler, that I think that tap, discard a card, exile the top 2 cards of your library, choose one. You may play that card this turn. You can't cycle it, I don't believe. Am I correct?
Magmatic Channeler,
you
or not?
Play it.
I believe cycling is an inactivated ability, so no.
Right, so you can't activate its ability. Yeah, so you can't cycle it. But, I mean, we already have a 4/4, it's Flourishing Fox, so I'm not sure it's necessary. Maybe I'd rather play Yidoro in this slot.
I don't
Is
know.
Eudoro better?
It's a turtle. I love it.
Yeah, Totoal is better.
So why don't you talk about our number one deck?
Okay, our number one deck is
The number one budget deck.
probably the deck that I'm going to be playing going into rotation, even though I have a lot of these decks built. I have all of these decks built except for the top number one one. Yes, I could possibly build all of these decks. So maybe I biased myself because I wrote up this list. But is it aggro or is it Spellslinger? So it's blue red cantrips essentially. And the key finisher cards are Stormwing Entity, Riddle Form, Sprite Dragon, all of which are cards that just grow bigger or care about whether you have instant or sorceries, and a lot of cantrips and other cheap spells. So, Omen of the Sea, Shock, Opt, Frantic Inventory, all cards that you should have, if you played through them 21 season, and B, if you just progress through the starter thing. This is going to be a very easy deck for you to build. Especially because I think the blue red deck was like almost this. It already came with like one Stormwing Entity. I think it came with some Riddle Forms and some Sprite Dragons. So this should be a very easy deck to build. I think this is the best budget deck going into rotation. We've seen streamers posting 75% win rates at Diamond and Platinum. Oh, not Diamond, no. Gold and Platinum levels with this deck. It doesn't lose a ton with rotation, except one of my favorite cards, Dreadhorde Arcanist, also loses Aethergust, which is one of the best blue removal spells ever, and sees major play in Modern. But I think this deck is good, and it's just a couple of good cantrips away from being tier 2, just regular tier 2.
That seems about right. That's it.
That is it on our top budget decks. So everyone go download MTG Arena if you haven't already, or log in to make sure you get those 10 individual ICRs. That is it for today. You can email us at youngpyrocast@gmail.com. Please like, share, subscribe, and the best way that you can support the show is just tell a friend. Let your friends know who play Magic. Let them know that we exist. That really helps out the podcast. Also, you can join our Discord, so that should be in the description below. You can ask questions there. We have a good way of answering questions. That's probably the best way. And oh, send in commander or regular, like historic or standard deck recommendations, or for us to brew around. You can send those to us probably through email. And yeah, we'll be able to find that.
Anyways,
Last week we did a sweet Korvold fan suggestion deck. So yeah, if you'd like your deck featured on the show, email that to us.
yeah,
And
thanks for listening, everyone.
We will see you next week. We've got lots of Zendikar Rising content to talk about. Back to Commander next week. And we will see you all next time.